Madam Speaker, I rise in this Honorable House to respond to the budget address delivered by the Right Honorable Prime Minister and Minister for Finance last week Thursday. Madam Speaker, since in my maiden address, you gave me leave to express my heartfelt gratitude to the people of the Lavery constituency for their vote of confidence in my humble abilities to represent them in this Honorable House, there is less an occasion for an extended introduction. Madam Speaker, having said so, I will get down to business. During the Prime Minister's budget presentation last Thursday evening, Madam Speaker, I could not help but remember the words of my predecessor, the Honorable Vellon Leo John, who in response to a typical budget presentation by this very same Prime Minister sometime during the 1990s, he noted, and I quote, "Mr. Speaker, if during the Prime Minister's budget address a Martian, assuming that there are Martians, Mr. Speaker, a Martian had mysteriously entered this August Assembly, he, the Martian, would have come to the seemingly ineluctable conclusion that this Prime Minister was indeed a virginal Prime Minister entering his very first term in office, pregnant with the seeds of reorganization and bald intentions," unquote. Madam Speaker, my predecessor made this remark because year in, year out, he would listen to the Prime Minister deliver cooking clever budget to this Honorable House, and very little was achieved, Madam Speaker. So, Madam Speaker, I have but one lamp by which my feet are guided, and that is the lamp of experience. I know of no better way of judging the future but by the past. And judging by the past, Madam Speaker, what sudden magic that this Prime Minister has emerged with could justify the hopes with which honorable members opposite have found his feet to solace themselves and this Honorable House, Madam Speaker. But Madam Speaker, since the Prime Minister took us on memory lane, I think that I can best explain this while on memory lane with the Right Honorable Prime Minister. Madam Speaker, after gaining the political independence from the United Kingdom, the countries in the Caribbean rightfully place strong emphasis on improving social conditions because we enjoy preferential treatment. And of course, we started to embrace tourism as an engine for economic growth. By the late 80s to 90s, Madam Speaker, most of the Caribbean countries started to enjoy living standards of upper middle income countries. In addition, Madam Speaker, countries like St. Lucia in the ECCU enjoyed a sustained period of price and exchange rate stability. Further, Madam Speaker, during the Cold War, certain developed countries channel a significant level of foreign aid into our country. Madam Speaker, while countries like Barbados utilized a period of seemingly economic calm to develop the health and other social infrastructure, Madam Speaker, very little was achieved in St. Lucia under this very same Prime Minister. Governance was largely defined by a doctrine that I refer to as the Comptonism Doctrine, with little respect for the rule of law and constitutionality. Victimization was the order of the day, and by 1990, this country had become ungovernable by this Prime Minister. With the economy failing, Madam Speaker, the dislocation in the social fabric of this country. And to compound the situation, Madam Speaker, in the early 90s, communism was mute with the end of the Cold War, which reduced our geopolitical significance. And the political and economic landscape was littered with unanswered questions and challenges. Madam Speaker, this Prime Minister could not tell us how far we had come in our journey from darkness toward light. He could not tell us where we were nearing the light, for the shadows of another night were closing in upon us. So much so that he handed the mantle of leadership to Dr. Bonnery. Madam Speaker, while the Prime Minister last Thursday, and to use his words, were parading in this Honorable House accusing us of poverty, etc., I would like to quote Nelson in that. It was an address delivered by the leader of the opposition in December 2004. In December 4, 2005, Madam Speaker, on page 5, he noted, and I quote, "He saddled Dr. Lewis with a failing economy, a health sector that was in tatters, an education system that was elitist and characterized by a lack of opportunities for young minds to explore the fullness of their potential, an agricultural sector that depended entirely on a banana industry that had not been modernized or prepared to deal with new trade realities, a ghastly inhuman penal system where prisoners rioted on a daily basis, a deteriorating physical infrastructure and labor and social unrest." This was the St. Lucia that Compton bequeathed. That was the St. Lucia we inherited, unquote.
Well, Member, I gather that you are prepared to meet this document with the House.
Certainly, Madam Speaker. Yes, Madam Speaker, we inherited a country where a host of unemployed youth face the grim problem of existence, and an equally great number toil with little return. A country where a great percentage of the rural population were deprived of basic social amenities, lack of adequate housing, water, health services, means of communication, schools, and means of life. They lived under the most miserable conditions, all the evils that foster misery. And Madam Speaker, the urban drift the Prime Minister spoke about last Thursday actually took place during the period that he was Prime Minister of this country. Madam Speaker, sometime during the early 80s in this country, the population of St. Lucia was almost evenly distributed between North and South. An internal migration during the 1980s caused an overbalance of population in the city. And so we have more than 50% of the population residing in the northern tip of the island. So this was the morbid scenario that was the legacy of the Prime Minister, Madam Speaker. But he criticized Kenyanomics. And at this juncture, Madam Speaker, I would like, as I enter further into the cauldron of this debate, to refer to Kenyanomics. Madam Speaker, when the Star of Freedom rose in St. Lucia on May 23rd, 1997, given the fact that productivity growth had declined in St. Lucia prior to 1997, to improve or even sustain growth, productivity growth needed to be improved, which meant that the fundamental drivers of growth needed to get back to center stage. Keeping this in mind, Madam Speaker, policies for sustained poverty-reducing growth that helped to improve productivity and increase output diversification were initiated by the SLP government under the stewardship of Dr. Kenny B. Anthony, and Kenyanomics started to work in this country. Key economic objectives, Madam Speaker, were job creation, poverty alleviation, reduction of inequality, and the overall growth of wealth in St. Lucia. The central program of the social sector focused on poverty alleviation through a range of programs that address income, human, and capital and asset poverty. It is in this intersection, Madam Speaker, between access to services, income, and assets, that the overall poverty trends over the past decade on the Kenyanomics will be discussed by my colleague, the Honorable Member for Supre. But suffice it to say, Madam Speaker, a recent assessment of the level of poverty in St. Lucia revealed that wealth in St. Lucia is much more equally distributed today than it was 15 years ago, and the rate of indigence has dropped significantly. How do you call that, Madam Speaker? Kenyanomics. Madam Speaker, In the 9 years of Kenyonomics, the economy grew at a rate of approximately 2% per annum on average. If the drought of 2000 and the September 11, 2001 crisis are ignored, the average growth rate was over 3%. The economy grew to the point where we recorded 5.4% in 2006, the highest level in more than a decade. Kenyonomics, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, despite job losses arising out of the challenges confronting the banana industry, other sectors, unemployment dropped from 22% to less than 15%. With Kenyonomics, Madam Speaker. Manufacturing, Madam Speaker. Manufacturing. And in this regard, I would like to refer to the Social and Economic Review of St. Lucia for last year, Madam Speaker. And on page 3, it states, and I quote, following 2 years of growth, value added in the manufacturing sector rose by 6.7% on the strength of the performance of the beverage subsector. The sector contributed 6.8% to real GDP in the review period. Madam Speaker, unquote, and I believe that the Prime Minister in his budget address last Thursday went further to indicate the gains that were made in that particular sector. The construction sector, Madam Speaker, and I'd like to continue with the same document on the same page 3. And I'd just like to reinforce or substantiate the position of the Right Honourable Prime Minister, who had the decency to acknowledge success under Kenyonomics, Madam Speaker. Construction activity in both the public and private sectors provided a major impetus to growth in 2006. Unquote. Now, Madam Speaker, the private sector investment was very significant because of confidence in the SLP administration, because we created the conducive environment for the seeds of investment to germinate, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, at this juncture, I would like to examine this budget more closely. And since time and strict relevancy will not permit me to deal with all aspects of the budget, given the time allotted to me, I shall now focus my attention on the areas that I shadow: civil aviation, trade, industry, and commerce. Madam Speaker, the new government plans for trade, industry, and commerce are contained on pages 35 to 41 of the budget address by the Right Honourable Prime Minister. And Madam Speaker, on page 46, the Prime Minister argues that the main challenge facing the private sector is the need to enhance competitiveness. And this challenge can be overcome by adopting an approach of capacity building for human resource development as the primary response. Madam Speaker, because of the mess education was in under the United Workers' Party, prior to 1997, enrollment in secondary education, when we entered office, was less than 50%. St. Lucia's enrollment in tertiary education was approximately 14% compared with Barbados, which had a rate of 41.2%. Returns to education in Barbados at the tertiary level were between 7% and 10%, while that for St. Lucia was between 22 and 34%. This variation of returns to education between the two countries can be related to the variation in the supply of skills, Madam Speaker. Barbados, whose successful education system is able to produce a high supply of skills, provides high-quality workers with relatively low returns, thereby contributing to increased competitiveness of the Barbadian firm. So you see, Madam Speaker, that problem of lack of competitiveness was created by this very same Prime Minister, Madam Speaker. And when we got into office, we abolished shift systems. We built an expanded school to ensure that our children, our babies have access to a secondary education to improve the skill base of this country. I do not even have to go into other areas. My competent colleague from Castries South will deal with the education aspect in more detail. But Madam Speaker, in 1998, we introduced an employment tax credit to companies that employ university graduates. This credit allowed the company to claim the salary of the employed graduate plus an additional amount of 25% of the total salary paid during the income year. This was to assist firms in becoming more competitive, Madam Speaker. So when the Prime Minister comes there and talks about competitiveness and believes that he's introducing something new, he's not introducing anything new, Madam Speaker. On page 47 of the budget address, the Prime Minister said, "The first of this government's interventions in the manufacturing and services sector will center on building competitiveness at the firm and industry level. In this regard, implementation of the national export strategy will be one of the main areas of emphasis of the Ministry of Trade, Industry and Commerce." Madam Speaker, the national export strategy that was conceived under the SLP administration, an offspring of Kenyanomics, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, still on page 47, he noted, "Through the Ministry of Trade, Industry and Commerce, we'll embark on a domestic trade promotion program which will seek to encourage inclusions and visitors to our shores to consume locally produced goods and services." Madam Speaker, still an offspring of Kenyanomics. On page 48, he continued, "At the small firm level, emphasis will be placed on implementing the Micro and Small-Scale Business Development Act, which was passed in this Honorable House since 1998, but which has not been operationalized as important aspects of the legislation were not implemented." Madam Speaker, I'm pleased to indicate to this Honorable House that all but one aspect was not implemented. And so again, Madam Speaker, this is not something which was conceived by the current Prime Minister, but rather another offspring of Kenyanomics. Madam Speaker, I turn to page 49 of the budget address. A new draft consumer protection bill has been developed by the Attorney General's office. And in the coming months, public consultation will be held with stakeholders. Madam Speaker, that was conceived under the SLP administration, an offspring of Kenyanomics. Madam Speaker, I now focus my attention to page 40. On page 40, Madam Speaker, and the Prime Minister went on, "The modern knowledge-based economy and the technologically driven nature of the world requires that we position our economies accordingly. Information communication technology represents an effective means of expanding our economic potential far beyond the traditional economic boundaries, thus allowing remote areas to become integrated with the global mainstream without the traditional time, distance and cost." Madam Speaker, again, Madam Speaker, we began the process whilst we're in office in order to foster an environment for greater and more effective use of ICT. Through Kenyanomics, we took a systematic approach to telecommunications liberalization and the adoption and usage of ICT. We created a more competitive telecommunications sector, including addressing the problem of the high cost of the internet. Began upgrading human resources, which caused the United Nations to rank us number one in the CARICOM region in e-government readiness. Nothing in that section, Madam Speaker, was new. plastered with Kenyonomics. Plastered with Kenyonomics, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, the only thing that was new was when the Prime Minister increased, and we are talking about recurrent expenditure, increased agency administration from 459,000 $879 to $702,493. That's a significant increase. For Prime Minister was parading all over the country and in this honorable house talking about how he's going to reduce recurrent expenditure. It is not within the self-competence of the right honorable Prime Minister to do that, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, the tax burden. The tax burden, Madam Speaker. No new taxes. That's what the campaign was all about. And even when he came to this honorable house, the right honorable Prime Minister kept on talking about no new taxes. I find it more than proper, Madam Speaker, to begin my discourse on tax by referring to a document prepared by the St. Lucia Labour Party and it's entitled 10 Years of Progress with Labour. And I'd like to quote from page 5. Reducing the tax burden. Perhaps the area in which our detractors have been most dishonest in the criticism is the charge that we have increased the tax burden on St. Lucia. However, an analysis of our record over the past 9.5 years will demonstrate the exact opposite. We reduced the rate of corporate tax from 33.3% to 40%, one of the lowest corporate tax rate in the Commonwealth Caribbean. Property tax reduction. We inherited property taxes of 7%, 8% and 14% of the assessed rental value of the property. In 2001, we introduced a single uniform rate of 5%. And for commercial properties, we established a rate of 0.25% tax on the open market value. Madam Speaker, I can go on and on. But time and strict relevancy will not permit me. I'll spend 40 days and 40 nights telling you about the reduction in taxes under the SLP administration, Madam Speaker. But Madam Speaker, the Prime Minister, I was so amused when he came there and talked about cooking gas and the 20 pounds in the lever to change. Is that another way of saying that you have increased the 20-pound cylinder by 6-point-something%? Come out and say that you are increasing cooking gas at a time when the fuel prices are not escalating, Madam Speaker. Radical change. To introduce the 20-pound cylinder by in excess of 6% and the 100-pound cylinder by approximately 13.3%. No new taxes. Complaining about our government placing burdens, tax burdens on people in this country. A new $100 vehicle license was introduced. No new taxes. That's what he said. But Madam Speaker, during the SLP administration, when we decided to do away with the license, it is because we felt we could have been more efficient collecting revenues at the pump. So that cost was transferred to the pump. Now when you slap another $100 without the explanation of whether or not you are going to reduce fuel prices, Madam Speaker, I must object very strongly to the Prime Minister's suggestion, recommendation, or what he intends to do during that financial year. Madam Speaker, to make matters worse, the Prime Minister came there and announced that. And you know, Madam Speaker, on top of all this fuel, cooking gas, all kind of thing, he come and talk about introducing VAT. But Madam Speaker, I do not believe that the Prime Minister and his government has the capacity to implement VAT in a fashion that will not further burden the Malawi in this country. And I want you to just read on the experience of Grenada and Belize to prove my point, Madam Speaker. And so I cannot stand in this Honorable House and pretend that what the Prime Minister presented last week, Thursday, was such a brilliant budget. Already, we start to dissect the anatomy of it. So that you know, that cocaine clearance surface, we begin to dig deep into it. And then, at the end, we shall see what this budget is all about. Madam Speaker, during the SLP administration, increases in oil prices fuel price increases in food items. Despite the fact that we remove all consumption taxes on certain items, the UWP in the little campaign all over the island, flabble, accused us of being responsible for the increases, although we had removed all the consumption taxes. And they accused us by saying that we are encouraging a monopoly in the supermarket business. They included in the manifesto that they would remove consumption taxes when in office, all sorts of libewa. Today, food prices have increased. And the heir of the alleged monopoly sits in the cabinet, Madam Speaker. Who are you fooling? Madam Speaker, let me now turn my attention to civil aviation. Madam Speaker, given our airlift challenges, I thought I would have heard concrete plans coming out of this budget, Madam Speaker. I thought, given the fact that we are competing for airlift in the international market, we expanded the hotel plans in this country, which would make further demand on airlift. I thought, Madam Speaker, I would have heard that we were going to explore the possibility of having regional traffic to land at Hiwanora, so that Hiwanora International Airport will serve as a hub to the Windward Islands at least. Because St. Lucia is centrally located in the Caribbean, an ideal location for hubs. And we have one of the best approaches. You come in overseas and you take off over the sea. Brilliant. Good surface runway. Madam Speaker, currently what exists? Regional traffic land at George F. L. Charles and international traffic land at Hiwanora. So Hiwanora becomes a dead end because the carriers coming from Europe cannot consolidate the shipload factor to make it attractive to come to St. Lucia directly from the United Kingdom. So we have been losing international traffic as a result of that practice. So I was expecting at least there's somebody in the cabinet who indicated openly that is quite conversant with air transport. I expected to see some development along those lines. Because hubs play a very important role in attracting tourists and international events such as conferences and exhibitions. And Madam Speaker, when you have a focused traffic flow into an international airport, you have the opportunity to improve your commercial revenues at the airport. And St. Lucia would be in a position to expand its outlets and to showcase what is ours, our own heritage. And it would differentiate our effort from other efforts around the world. And when you have direct flights every day from Europe, it makes your destination more attractive to the tourist, because one of the things about quality is that you are able to get a flight on a daily basis, or even more than one flight should you miss one. I heard about another terminal going to be built to accommodate private jets, and that was the plan to deal with elites in our country. Madam Speaker, I've never heard Mabulok before. That's a Libya one, Madam Speaker. That is neither here nor there. And the time has come, and I know breaking with the past is never easy, but the time has come for us to open up that issue of Elif to some public debate, get the politicians together on both sides. Because there are certain decisions that any time they're in government they're afraid to take because it might hurt them politically. I think the time has come, especially talking about private sector driven economy, the time has come for us to open up some debate on the future of Elif in this country. Madam Speaker, now with the mist of this budget have cleared away, I believe that St. Lucians will see the truth eye to eye and face to face, that this budget is another glum budget with just empty promises. Because if we take our journey through the corridors of time, we will see this Prime Minister coming there with all sorts of fancy ideas, fancy plans, and nothing materialized. Very little materialized. And today, Madam Speaker, I am sad because this budget, I do not see this budget really in tune with the socio-economic realities of our time. And to take St. Lucia on a higher plane of development from where Kenyonomics left it, a return of Comptonism will simply destroy the gain of the past. Madam Speaker, whilst we were in government, and I would like to focus on my constituency for a few moments, because they are the ones who actually propel me to this Honorable House to conduct business on their behalf. And human tongue has no words to express my gratitude to them. Because in that election, Madam Speaker, in all of us on the opposition side, the only constituency that represented an increase in the margin, and by over 100%, was the Labour constituency. And I'm indeed pleased, Madam Speaker, to stand in this Honorable House and represent the interest and outside of this Honorable House. Madam Speaker, after rehabilitating a number of roads, we started to renew the Labour constituency. The Monfall Road, the Pewaji Road, the Lahore Road, the Pitibuk Road, the Devwa Road in Oji, and the Wavin Pokate Road. And then we're going to continue the total rehabilitation of the roadworks. And it is in our manifesto, Madam Speaker, because I'm in business. When we met with the former Prime Minister, every constituency had their priorities in there. And so part of the plan was to stimulate economic development in the constituency of Labrie by preserving our French heritage, rebuilding the Labrie constituency along those lines, with the eventual goal of making Labrie a heritage tourism village. And that would involve substantial investment in acquiring land and rationalizing properties in the Labrie constituency. And Madam Speaker, with this budget and with my Prime Minister speaking the same language of victimization, how can members of the Labrie constituency be optimistic, Madam Speaker? Madam Speaker, at this juncture, I would like to return to the budget in very, very concrete terms. And I would like to give my final comment on this budget. This budget is a product of directionless leadership. No one knows to where this budget is leading. Madam Speaker, a budget is about fundamental political change. And at your very first outing in this Honorable House, after decades in opposition, you had to come to this Honorable House with a realistic budget to excite the people of the nation to move forward. Join hands and sing the national anthem, sons and daughters of St. Lucia, love the land that gave us. But I'll come to that in a while, Madam Speaker. I attempted, Madam Speaker, to review this budget by considering three basic questions. One, fiscal discipline. Were the total revenue spending and the surplus or deficit appropriate in light of economic conditions, the country's development needs, and the government's taxing capacity? The second, effective allocation. Are the government's priorities right for building the country, pursuing development objectives, and achieving planned objectives? And the third one, Madam Speaker, is efficient services. Is the government attempting to provide efficient and accessible public service and giving citizens value for money? This budget completely defies such an analysis. And you know what I discovered, Madam Speaker? That this budget is suffering from multiple personality disorder. With serious mood swings, Madam Speaker. On one hand, Madam Speaker, you can see an architect of the budget who has some knowledge of economics, and so you can see some evidence of that. But going through the entire budget, there is no common thread that links that particular logic of that worldview. And then, emerging out of that budget as well, is manifestation of a spoiled child who wants to have his way, Madam Speaker, this type of attitude. I want my toys, I want my toys. And then, you have another group saying, look, I want some goodies for my constituency. And then the final product, I can see a father who's trying to please all the children. And then we end up with a cut and paste kind of situation. Multiple personality disorder. But the time has come for those who are going all around the island, blabbo, blabbo, believing that they would have gotten their way. There are two sets of people in the United Workers Party. They are the key players and the role players. And unfortunately, most of the key players are not occupying the chairs on this side of the house. This budget did not deliver on the promises made to the electorate. I did not see the removal of the environmental levy. And the one about the $12,000. They say, oh, $12,000 will remove it. But obviously it will disappear. Because if you're not going to allow vehicles more than 5 years to enter the country, then there's no need for the $12,000 levy. It is something like Fielmo Makumekini. Fielmo Makumekini. That's what it is. I see no urgency to shack up with Taiwan. I see no debt-cutting strategy. I see no crime-fighting strategies. We came to this honorable house the last time, repealing National Crime Commission. All they did, take a yellow cap and put it on top of all the achievements of the Labour Party government, and they're so unimaginative, they simply call it cap. You only call it cap, government. But the hypocrisy of this budget is best captured in its theme. Bridging the divide and reuniting St. Lucia, forging one destiny by creating opportunities for all. Madam Speaker, when a Prime Minister wants to reunite a people after an election, your language supposed to be, now the elections are over, let us organize ourselves in an integrated whole. In that way we shall create the conditions necessary for creating a more solid control of our collective destiny. And that we cannot split the development of our nation at its political team. Instead, the Prime Minister said, Sigma is going to last, and that he's going to engage in some pruning exercise to depoliticize the public service. Madam Speaker, at the first available opportunity in Beaufort South at our rally, after thanking the people of Labrie, I proceeded immediately to ask them to accept the results of the general election. I told them one of the fundamental principles of the democratic system is that the majority rules. And the United Workers Party has secured 11 out of the 17 seats in the House. Give them the opportunity to govern and continue to make the contribution to national development as they did during our first years in opposition. And then I proceeded to caution the Right Honorable Prime Minister. I said that the Right Honorable Prime Minister is in a unique position to secure peace in this country. Do not victimize our people. And that if he victimizes our people, Madam Speaker, there'll be neither rest nor peace in this land, and the very foundations of this land shall be shaken. But you know, Madam Speaker, instead of understanding the context in which it was used, because a little piece was taken and just for public consumption, Madam Speaker, we have seen unrest in this country before, provoked by this very Right Honorable Prime Minister. And in memory's eye, Madam Speaker, I can see the problem with the teachers. Through the Prime Minister's anti-worker policies, he brought down upon his head a more nearly unanimous condemnation by public opinion than any other period in the history of this country, which left the teachers and public servants with no outlet for the discontent other than dislodging the United Workers Party from the seat of power. And there was neither rest nor peace during prolonged industrial unrest in the country. I remember people wanting their goods and customs on strike and all sorts of dislocation in the place. Madam Speaker, another daring example that comes in memory's eye is the situation with the farmers. The Right Honorable Prime Minister, with unmitigated savagery and brutality, trampled upon the farmers, which resulted in the death of two young farmers. How can you blame farmers, my brother, Madam Speaker, for organizing the Banana Salvation Committee to take a stand against arrogance and evil, Madam Speaker? And during that period, there was neither rest nor peace in this country, and the very foundations of this land were shaken. You do not have to be a fortune teller, Madam Speaker, to know that if the Right Honorable Prime Minister decides to go and victimize people on a large scale, that the trade unions representing the workers will not take it easy. And Madam Speaker, we have a responsibility for our supporters who are going to be victimized under this government. And so, Madam Speaker, they accuse me of being violent. I am a product of Labrie, which I refer to as the People's Republic of Labrie. My mother and my father is responsible for me in terms of my genes. But the constituency of Labrie, they molded me. They fed me for my role to come here to represent them. I am cooked and baked in the Laborian culture. And you know that Laborians are non-violent people. I was shaped by Senator Agatha Javanel, one of the great architects of Labrie. Mr. Watson Lee, the late Hilary Dasheville, Mr. Rudy John, and many, many others, Madam Speaker, including my late scoutmaster, Mr. Lane Alphonse. Madam Speaker, they never taught me violence. When Neville Stark crossed the floor in this honorable house, he qualified for maximum penalty from the people of Labrie. But you know what, Madam Speaker? Our non-violent nature withheld a ready hand of vengeance. And we allow him to live with his 30 pieces of silver in his pocket. But Madam Speaker, having said so, I would like to tell you that while I am not violent, I shall not stand aside and look as this government utilizes the apparatus of the state as a weapon against my people. And I caution the Right Honorable Prime Minister, do not victimize our people. Well, today, as I stand in this Honorable House to deliver this budget address, I consider it a grand year. A year filled with the recollections of the growth and struggles of the St. Lucia Labour Party. And when the founders of our great party fought for freedom on this land, they fought for it so that St. Lucia will become a land for the brave and flourish as the land for the free. Not to stagnate in the swamplands of fear and cowardice. So, Madam Speaker, call me violent if you wish. Judge me as your moral conscience dictates you to. I reject victimization most vehemently. And the Prime Minister stood in this Honorable House last Thursday and still insists on the path of confrontation talking about victimization. Victimization is based on hatred, falsehood, and arrogance, and is devoid of any moral and political value. Therefore, Madam Speaker, I want to make it abundantly clear to this Honorable House that in recent times, just a recent week there, mass victimization took place. And we shall not remain there and allow you to intimidate my people. And so we are going to return to heightened political moods. So, Honorable Members of Opposition, you all are fortunate to hear the news before everybody else. Not only to put ourselves in a more thorough state of defense, but to employ all our resources to bring this Slavo government to terms and end the period of Slavo hostility and victimization and secure peace in this country. And no one can accuse us, Madam Speaker, of trying to create division in this country, because in 1997, when we got into office, despite a 6-1, what did Dr. Anthony say? There are no P's. We had just removed UWP and put in SLP. We had removed up there and put another P. But there were no P's. And then, Madam Speaker, he proceeded to accommodate and stretch the olive branch to the UWPs. And did they profit the opportunity for them to continue to make a contribution to nation building? No. They kept undermining the government. But Dr. Anthony stood his ground and still continued to advocate one nation. And I believe that's part of the price that he paid. Because they didn't appreciate that they're on the radio every day. Hey, morning, noon, and night. And whilst we were asleep, there were forces up in the night, undermining and planning and plotting, Madam Speaker. But there is a just God who presides over the destinies of nations. And while you know that people put you all there, people put us there as well. And government needs to change. So, Madam Speaker, having made my position abundantly clear on the issues, how can I get my conscience to support a budget that is glamorized like this, suffering from multiple personality disorder, not suitable to build our country? I saw no strategy to improve revenue. And so, Madam Speaker, I have no confidence in the Prime Minister. None whatsoever. Because the very same man who could not tell us in 1996 how far we have come in our journey from darkness toward light, today has returned more than a decade later and said that he has a master plan and some master wisdom to take St. Lucia to a level that the Labour Party could not take it. And if you compare the period of Comptonism with Kenyonomics, you will see a vast difference. And this is why the architect of the budget who understands the economics had no alternative but to borrow, borrow, and borrow from Kenyonomics. So, Madam Speaker, I thank you and I thank honorable members for the opportunity to address this honorable house. And since I know that I could not get extra time, or for one, I made sure that I confined my brief remarks on the budget to the time allotted to me. Thank you very much, Madam.